Hi, this is comedian Mary Santora, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Elizabeth Seaman. Enjoy.
Welcome to The Default Setting, where we find out what makes you tick, because we have ways of making you talk. I'm your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm your co-host, Elizabeth Seaman.
And we have special guest co-host.
Somebody's just growled.
Gigi Chick here today.
Yay, Gigi.
Gigi Chick is visiting. And we have our wonderful comedian and one half of Flamingo City, the sketch group, which is one of the funniest fucking sketch groups I've ever seen in my life, Mr. Joe Briggs. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you guys?
We are great. I am hopped up on coffee. I'm in that zone of, like, the coffee's hitting. Yep.
I'm jealous.
Sorry.
I, like, the first thing I had for drink this morning was a Gatorade. That's, like, where I'm at.
So it sounds like you had a good night last night.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah.
Well, Mingo City performed. I saw them. It was
Did
very
they?
Funny. Now I can also help vouch because I hadn't seen them before.
Okay, perfect. Yesterday. Let's talk about this. So your default setting is awkward.
Yeah.
Okay. So
that was the perfect answer to that question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I got. So tell me how that works out when you're doing, like, I mean, does... So I find there's this dichotomy, and you and I were, Gigi and I were talking about this last night. I find it interesting there's a dichotomy for people who actively want to get themselves up on a stage in front of a bunch of people, but are introverts or are shy or are awkward. Like, do you find that you kind of put up a mental wall between yourself and the stage to overcome that? Do you just get in a zone? How do you override that?
I almost feel like a different person on stage. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like when you're on, like when I'm on stage, I'm not really scared of it. But then like when I'm off stage, I hate it so much. Like when, before I go up, I'm like, I don't want to do this. Why am I doing this? And then I do it and I'm like, oh yeah, this is why. And then even like afterwards.
All professional actors and comedians are like the exact same way. Every time I see interviews and they're just like, oh yeah, I hate being the center of attention, or I hate like talking in front of people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? But it's just like you click into this other mode or something.
Right. It's like when you're on stage, I feel like sometimes it's like I'm interacting with these people, but it's like on my terms.
Mm-hmm.
And like I have a rehearsed way that I'm going to do this.
Yep. Yeah,
and as opposed to like people
look you in real
life. Yeah, you have more control, it feels like. And then people come up to you in real life and you're like, oh fuck, what are they gonna say? Oh god, what am I gonna say? Oh god.
Maybe that's why I would suck. Like I have such like respect for people who can do stand up. Like I've never tried it, so I can't really say for sure, but I have an idea that I would not be good. Because I'm like the opposite. I am not socially awkward and I have no problem interacting with literally anybody in person. So I feel like if I got on stage I would just be like so
I mean like I wasn't good for a while. Like the first time I did stand up I legit had a panic attack on stage.
No!
Oh, yeah. And it was at Euro Gyro in Canada. It wasn't like there was a big crowd. Like
high stakes. Hey, the gyro brings high stakes.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think...
I love it.
Yeah, I think, like, a panic attack is probably better than the majority of things that happen on that stage at the Euro Gyro.
Yeah, I didn't die. I just thought I was, which is, like, okay.
Oh, no. So did, like... So was it one of those things you had to, like, stop your set? Or, like, did you power through it?
I powered through it because I was, like, I gotta... I don't know. In my head, I was, like, I gotta do something. But I just kept pretty much breathing heavily into the microphone for, like... too long. And now it wasn't like nobody was laughing. Like,
yeah.
And then like Jorge was hosting it that night and like I've met him once since then, but he like coached me through a panic attack and then I got one joke out and was like, thanks, I'm Joe Briggs, and that was it. Yeah.
What a good guy.
You know what? I'm gonna say though, like so many people, if that had happened to them, they'd be like, okay, so never again. Like I'm never
Yeah.
And you kept doing it.
Or it'd be like one of the comedians that's just like, well, fuck you guys then. I'm out of here. You just, like, leave, and you're like... I will never forget the one guy at the... was it the Funny Stop? Where the Funny Stop?
Oh.
And he literally got angry at us for not, like, just not sincerely laughing at his joke. And nobody was, like, heckling him or anything.
Yeah.
And he was just like, oh, really? Really? You guys don't relate to this?
I don't understand. Like, how is you, like, berating the crowd for not enjoying you gonna, like, get them on your side?
Yeah. And I feel like
you know what I'll do? I'll yell at them.
Do you feel like the awkwardness comes from, like, a humility, self-consciousness? Because I feel like there's different ways you can have awkwardness. And we're talking about, like, people who get pissed when you don't laugh at their jokes. I feel like they can still be awkward, but they're in, like, the egotistical sort of awkward sense. And I'm wondering, like, how do you define yours?
I don't know. Like, if somebody doesn't laugh at my jokes, I'm like, these jokes aren't good. That's what I think. I like, go the other direction. I'm like, I guess I'm not funny anymore.
Are you in a situation where you're like, you know what? I think this is actually good. It's just now I know I can't say this type of joke at, like, this place. Like, just different audiences.
Yeah, it's weird when I hate it when you have a joke that, like, you know has worked before, and then you do it, and it's, like, a bad crowd or whatever. You're not on that day, and, like, they don't laugh. And then you're just like, well, I guess that joke sucks now. But that's, like... It doesn't.
But. No, yeah.
Hang
on to it.
You're not, like, connecting with them, and then you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
If that one didn't land, the rest of this is going bad.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
I mean, and to be fair, like, there's a lot of audiences that are just like, why are you here? Like, they come and they're just like, I'm here for the booze. I'm like, well, you're also watching something live happening in front of you, so why don't you respond like a human?
Yeah.
Just people get, like, weird.
Yeah, I mean, and we were talking about this a little bit last week, like, the idea of the interaction with a comic, like, after the show, and sort of the awkwardness that ensues with that.
Oh, my.
I mean, like, you were talking about it. You were mentioning it. Both, you were both on the giving and receiving ends of that.
Like, anytime people come up to me, I don't know what to say to them. So, or, like, if somebody references a joke I made, I don't even, like, I'll miss the reference, and it's my joke. I can tell a joke about Friends, and some guy came up to me last week and, like, at the show was like, yeah, so do you like Friends? And I was like, not really. And I don't.
I
just have a joke about it, but it was really awkward.
Could this be any more awkward?
You're like, oh, no. Yeah. I don't.
Jesus.
But I did the same thing. Yeah, I did the same. I met Gary Goldman, and I did the same thing. I, like, went up to him, and I, like, geeked out for a second. He was like, thank you for coming. I just walked away.
I know. I think that's a mistake I make, too, is, like, I confuse people's stage and online personas with their real personas. Like, I just assume if they're, like, really wacky or hilarious online. Like, there's this guy. He's called Obvious Plant. And I don't know.
Oh, yeah. This stuff is funny.
So I don't know if you've ever seen Obvious Plant. Mm-hmm. But what he does is he makes these, like, weird things. Like, he makes, like, weird plastic toys that are, like reminiscent of when we were kids, like G.I. Joe type stuff, Barbie doll type stuff, but also, like, weird, like, if you remember, like there was, like, this dog flashlight we all had as a kid, and, like, he basically bastardizes these, like, toys and turns them into things, and he, like, so, like, the doggy flashlight, I'll send you guys some pictures at some point, the doggy flashlight turned into Karl Barks. And it was like, he shines a light on communism or, like, something like that. And, like, Lizzo actually, he made this teeny, teeny, tiny purse. Like, this little plastic purse. And it was, like, a Valentino plastic purse, but it was, like, this big. And Lizzo took it to, like, the Grammys. And I was freaking out because, like, I actually went to his pop-up museum when he was here. And I was thinking, oh, this guy's going to be wacky. He's going to be crazy. And I go in and I was like, oh, my God, are you Jeff? And he was like, yeah. I was like, oh my God, I love your shit. And he's like, thanks. Do you have $20? I was like, yeah, here you go. Because we were, like, trying to get in the museum and we hadn't, like, paid admission yet. And
he was working his own register to get in.
Right, yeah, exactly. He was running the register. So, yeah, I was like, oh my God, you're Jeff. And he's like,
That's more money in his pocket, I guess.
Yeah. It's funny because now that, like, Lizzo's had his shit, he's just like, I'm selling shit for $300. Like, he's selling, like, these little plastic snakes for, like, $300. And, like, it's crazy shit. But, yeah, I mean, I think you forget, like, we're talking about Seinfeld has this quote that I always like to reference. It's, I can talk to all of you, but I can't talk to any of you.
Oh, yeah.
And just the difference between, like, you don't really, interacting with a crowd of being so different than, like, a one-on-one interaction. Like, I guess when you're talking at people, it's probably easier than when you're, like,
That's what I'm saying. It feels like there's like a safety barrier, even though it seems like there's a barrier up there. It's just like, aha, but this isn't your time to talk back. So I don't need to be prepared for what you're going to do to me.
The only thing I need from them is to laugh. That's it.
Yeah.
Someone talks back, when someone talks back, I'm like, please don't.
Don't do that, please.
Please don't do that.
They have that show. They have that show now where it's just all crowd work, which seems to me is almost kind of improv, right?
For the most part, I think it's very, you have to be on your toes at least.
I haven't seen the show because I wonder when it's 100% crowd work. Like you're basically just like going off of whatever's going on, right?
That's like sink or swim too. That's brutal.
You do stand up. I mean, do you have any sort of stuff you've worked on as far as crowd work? Do you just try to avoid crowd work?
No, I don't think so. Like if it feels natural, like if somebody does something weird in the audience that you have to call it out, I'll call it out and I can do that. But I've done crowd work. I don't like actively seek it out, but I can do it for the most part.
Yeah. I'm really weird. Cause like I'm so bad. I'm so awkward when I do stand up sometimes that like someone will literally like fall flat on their face and knock over 6 tables and a curtain will be on fire. And I'll just be like, so anyway, I says to the guy, like, I'm just not even like, cause I don't know how to stop everything I'm doing and acknowledge what the fuck is happening in front of me.
I'm not prepared to address any of it.
This isn't happening.
This isn't what I signed up for.
And I guess, like, you said you did Mike Bush's class, and that's mostly sketch. Was there any, have you done any improv?
Yeah, so he has, like, an improv class, too. I took one of those.
Okay.
And then I'm in an improv group. We haven't really done any shows lately. I think it's just, like, everybody's been really busy.
Yeah.
But, like, as far as comedy, I've been, like, focusing a lot more on stand-up right now, but I, like, used to do improv a lot more. I think, when I started doing comedy, that was the one thing I was doing the most.
Okay.
And I kind of wished.
Do you find improv at least helps you train a little bit for all the kind of shit that can come up both during sketch and stand-up?
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to, it's, like, weird because you have to be, like, in the right mindset. I feel like for stand-up, you have your jokes, so even if you're, like, off that day, it's all prepared.
Yeah.
Like, stand-up, like, if you're not in the zone, it's going to suck. Yeah. Or for improv, sorry. Yeah.
I've never done improv without, like, it seems intimidating. It seems scary.
I think
my awkwardness would probably show up real hard on stage. They'd be like, take this bicycle. And I'm like, I don't wanna. Oh, I can't say no. I'm supposed to yes.
I think I look at it as kind of almost like a college curriculum a little bit. Like, you kind of have to try some of each, and each sort of element of it really helps influence the other thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you, like, between sketch and stand-up, do you prefer one or the other?
Not really. I like doing them both a lot. I don't know. Stand-up's cool because I can kind of, like, do my own, like, not want to say do my own, it's just easier to do because it's only you. So, like, anytime you want to do a show, you can just go do a show.
Yeah.
But for sketch, I love working with Greg, so.
And you said your other half of Flamingo City is Greg?
Yeah.
Is he?
Oh, yeah, I should have said that, sorry.
No, that's okay. I've only talked to you yet, so I wasn't actually, I'm not familiar with Greg's work. Is he, do you guys kind of balance each other out? Like, is he kind of the more, like, audacious, less self-conscious one, or are you guys kind of pretty much on the same wavelength?
I think we're pretty much on the same wavelength. He kind of has to, like, reel me in a little. I'll write some, like, real weird shit, and he'll be like, all right, buddy, we got to tone this back. Because we do sketch together, and then in my free time, I'll do stand-up. But in his free time, not free time, like, he's, like, actually an actor. So he's, like, he's, like, doing Clue at Playhouse right now. He's, like, the understudy for all 6 male leads.
Oh, wow.
And also the dead body.
Wait, he's the understudy for the dead body?
I would be good at that.
No, he is the dead body.
Okay, I was you need the understudy to be a corpse.
In case that corpse is sick.
In case the corpse is sick.
How do you fucking learn? You have like six main characters' lines That's down insane. At any given time. Like, Jesus.
I don't know. He was like, I didn't see him for like 2 weeks. And I was like, do you have these all learned? And he was like, yeah, I pretty much know that. Because it's almost the entire play.
Right.
So I was like, damn.
Wow.
That's impressive as fuck.
I could not do that.
That's really cool.
And you guys met in your sketch writing class, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
How is it, like, the one thing I find the weird sort of dichotomy of, you know, I think we all, as artists, creators, entertainers, whatever, have a level of self-consciousness because you kind of need that in order to, like, observe things and find shit funny. But the hard thing is that you also have to connect, like when you want to start a sketch writing group, when you want to start an improv group, you actually have to talk to individuals and break down through sort of that awkwardness. And I don't know if you ever noticed that there's, like, a moment where you're just like, oh, shit, I broke through this, or if it's just omnipresent, like, throughout the entire relationship till you're dead.
Yeah, no, we even in, like, Michael's class, we kind of, like, hit it off, right? Like, we have really similar sense of humors, so we, like, hit it off, and we were, like, good at bouncing ideas in the class, and then when it was over, there was, like, one, like, real awkward time where I was like, you know, look, I kind of want to keep writing with you if you want to do that.
Yeah,
and he was like, yeah, I kind of want to do that too. And I was like, perfect.
She and I were literally just spending we spent like 20 minutes last night talking about finding out when your love is requited, and it's like the most magical thing. Like, when you secretly want to tell someone, but you're like afraid.
And then you find out later they felt the same things, and you're like, what?
Oh my god!
Yeah, we're both freaking out for no reason.
Yes!
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It's like everything is like, you know, even the most platonic relationships, you're just like, okay, do you want to be my friend? Because that was so...
That's kind of like how we were.
Yeah.
But not really. We were very open about that.
I was going to say, I feel like you and I were very just like, hello!
We just, like, pushed someone else up.
That's like,
we're friends now.
Yeah,
it's like the same emotion.
My ex-husband introduced us. We were like, okay, you go. We're going to push you
away. Leave now.
You can go bye-bye.
We don't need you. You've served your purpose.
Whoa.
Money on the dresser.
Before I knew Jess, and, like, he was always like, you know, you should be my wife. I feel like you guys would hit it off.
He was right.
He wasn't wrong.
He wasn't right about much, but he was right about that.
I feel like that's like when Jess and I became friends, it was kind of the same thing because, you know, like she was running shows and I just started and I'm like, oh, hey, she's really nice. And I'm just like, I want her to be my friend, but I also don't want her to be like, get away from me, noob. And I'm just like, I thought she was like, he was, like, my comedy mentor. I'll be like, okay, but just, like, I don't understand.
What's really
I just don't understand stuff. I'm like, who's that? Who are they talking about?
You're my most recent best friend. Like, you're, like, the one. And I was trying to remember, like, how. Because, like, sometimes best friendships happen, like, when you're kids and you don't remember. Like, you're just kids. So, like, you're running around and you're just like, oh, hey, you like this, I like this. And, like, I was trying to remember. I was like, as adults, how did we do that? And I still can't figure out how the hell it happened. I was just like, oh, wait. All of a sudden, one day, we were just, like, together all the time and hanging out all the time and talking all the time.
Yeah.
It's weird
how comedy is weird, too, because I don't think I would be making friends actively, like, if I wasn't doing comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I'd made, like, a good friend for years. And then I started doing comedy, like, a year ago. I met Gregory. I met Cody, Amber. You got, like, everybody.
Yep.
Like, I would never have had a reason. That's awesome.
Same thing. It was just like, oh, you know, I had new people, but then all of a sudden it's like, oh my god, now I know this, like, all these people.
Well, yeah, and your long-term boyfriend is a comedian, and, like, you know what I mean? Like, all that shit.
I don't.
I was watching something recently, and I don't remember what it was, but someone's like, I want gay friends, and they were like, just find one, and they'll introduce you to us. They know where they are.
They travel in packs? Like, what do they say?
It, like, if you just meet one or two, it'll open a door to, like,
50. I know, it's kind of
like, weird. That's like you meet one, he gives you a password, you go to a bar.
You get into the gay speakeasy of friendship.
That's so true, because it was like, I understand more human experience.
Yeah, that's how it is with, like, comedy, I would think, you know? Just like you were saying. Just like,
yeah.
Oh, now that I'm in this, it's like opened up a door to all these people that have the exact same interests.
It's so funny you said that, because I was literally thinking about that this morning. Like you were saying, Joe, about, like, the comedy scene. Because I've been out here a year and a half, and I was telling her, like, LA, I mean, this is like a really cliche thing, but LA is a really hard place to make friends. And it's not just because of the people, but it's because, like, if you meet someone that you really fucking hit it off with, they live 45 minutes away, and there's nothing that you can really do. Like, you just, there's, what are you going to do
different? Like, 45 minutes away, like, in the LA area.
It's like 5 miles.
It wouldn't be, like, if I was back home, and I was like, you live 45 minutes, like, what are you in, like, Lodi? Like, yeah I'm never going to see you again. Like, that seems so drastic to me. But then it's just like, oh, yeah. Because, I mean, it takes 45 minutes to get anywhere. So
yeah.
And plus, the two friends I've made that since I came out here, literally in the same week moved away. I was like, oh, good. Like, I made two friends. Oh, goodbye. See you. So, like, comedy scene back home is, like, I'm still tight with everybody because those are the only groups of people that I really still talk to. You know what I mean?
That's, like, crazy to me because, like, 45 minutes here, you're getting, like, the comics from, like, Youngstown and, Akron.
Like, oh, okay, I just go to Akron. Two of my friends bought houses in Parma, and I'm just like, I almost never see them now.
Oh, no!
Oh, yeah. My cousin lives in Parma, and we give her so much shit about it. We're like, when are you moving back? Like, come on, let's get rid of
it. Why is it the most annoying place to get to? Like,
oh, I live in Parma.
No good way to get
there. I love it.
Oh, Joe, are you in Parma?
Huh?
Are you in Parma?
I'm in Lakewood, but I was born and raised in Parma, and I'm very proud of it. Like that commercial.
proud of it.
So, do you love all their like new promo? Like all their like they have like
their horrible calligraphy sign thing.
Yeah, I think it's so funny. Like my dad was like mad about it, and I think it's just it's the funniest sign. They picked like the weirdest font.
There's like flamingos all around it. It's perfect.
It looks like a prison tattoo. It does. You're right. I never thought about it that way, but
oh, like it's a prison tattoo, and then maybe a tramp stamp. I don't know.
Yes.
But somebody used like a ballpoint pen and a needle to make it.
Yeah, they like amped up the big reveal. They got a fake sign, and they amped up the big reveal so much, they didn't get it quite right. So then, like, the day they had the big reveal, like, the grass around the sign was still dead. And it was so awkward.
That's the most Parma thing that they could have.
I was going to say, like, that's the most appropriate. Like, that's so appropriate.
I know. I was like, you guys don't even realize it, but you nailed it. Like,
you guys are on theme. I love it. We're staying in character the whole time. Yeah.
That's so great. For literally anyone who doesn't live in the Cleveland area, I'm trying to think of, like, a comparable Parma, like, equivalent. Parma's weird because it's actually technically, I think, what, like, the 11th largest city in Ohio or something? Weird?
Yeah, it's, really? Like, it was the largest suburb in the U.S. at one point in time.
Yeah. It's so weird.
And I know Lakewood's one of the most densely populated cities in the U.S.
I was going to say that, too. I think Lakewood's the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland's so weird. Yeah. Like, we have these, like, this sprawl, but then it's, like, some of the suburbs and exurbs are, like, notably larger than anywhere else on the planet as far as, like, cities and towns go. And they're so, like, because I know, like, there's so many times I've been in Lakewood where I'm, like, how am I still in Lakewood right now? Like, or, like, if someone says it's in Lakewood and I'm, like, oh, okay.
That's not anything, though.
Well, yeah, exactly, because I'm just, like, oh, okay, like, that's cool.
You mean, like, 117th or Rocky River? Like,
right! Exactly!
Are we West End or East
End? In the middle?
Right, because it's
totally different vibe.
Because you can say Lakewood, and you're like, "Oh, cool, I'm in Lakewood," but really, like, you could still be driving 20 minutes to like wherever
people
you're
think
going.
I'm in Lakewood. They're like, "You're in Lakewood, right?" I'm like, "No, I haven't been to Lakewood in years because I'm like near West Boulevard." I'm like, "That's like I'm relatively close to the Lakewood border, but like people just like lump it all together."
The Lakewood people are just full of themselves. They're like, "This is all ours.
It's ours."
Everybody,
you might as well take care. Like, I think you said it, like, when people ask me where I live in Lakewood, I'm by 117th, and when I say that, they're always like, oh, you're in Lakewood, and then you tell them where, and they're like, oh.
Yeah,
and they're, like,
yeah.
Condescending about it. I'm like, it's still kind of the same city.
Right. Like, I'm going to be moving this spring, and I want to, like, move as close, like, on, like, maybe, like, Lake, hopefully. Like, they have,
like, oh, yeah, they got some nice apartments over there.
But, like, closer to the Lakewood border, but not actually in Lakewood. Because
you don't
want to
pay Lakewood taxes, man. Yeah.
That fucking sucks. But yeah, it's just like,
yeah,
it's so weird that it just splits all of a sudden and you're like, okay, now it's Lakewood.
Yeah.
This is the poor Lakewood. And
so
this
has been Talk About Cleveland Hour with everyone.
Yeah.
So do you have a favorite venue where you feel like, I mean, speak while we're talking about that, like, do you feel like your comedy goes over better in Lakewood or Kent or Funny Stop? Do you have like a favorite area that you like to perform?
For stand-up?
Yeah. Or sketch, whatever.
Yeah. So sketch, like Mayhall's has been like real good to me.
Yeah.
So I like Mayhall. And then for stand-up, there's like, I like pretty much all of like Cody and Bill shows, like Craft Laughs at Great Lakes and the East End. Those are both usually really fun to do.
Yeah.
I did the Funny Stop for the first time, actually, on Wednesday, and it went well. It was fun.
God!
Yeah.
That one's always an adventure for a first time. Yeah. The first time, I did not know what to expect, though. Then I was like, well, it wasn't quite this, but...
I can't remember.
We're here now.
You were texting me the first time you did Funny Stop, or if I was there. I can't remember.
I think I was texting you. I don't think you were there. The first time I went down alone, and then I was super awkward because I still didn't know people very well yet. Yes. Like all these people, like I kind of know, and I'm like, where do I sit
what do I do with my hands?
I'm standing over here in the bar by these other comedians, and I'm like, maybe they'll talk to me, maybe they won't, I don't know.
maybe I'll get yelled at,
if I get close enough, it's like I'm part of this too, and maybe I'll just go hide in the dark room.
Maybe people yell at me in broken English, who knows.
I've heard so many stories about Pete before I met him that I could like do an impersonation of Pete without ever meeting him.
What?
And like when I got there, like Amber went too, and she was the one that got me on it. And we walked in, and Pete was at the door, and she was like, "Hey, this is Joe. He's doing stand up. He's never been here before." And Pete was like, "Do you do Mike Polk show?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "You do Bill Squire?" I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Fuck you," and that was it.
Yes! Oh my god, so many times! After the show, he'd be like, "You do a good job. Cody Cooper, he's an asshole. Bill Squire is a cunt." And I'm just like, we weren't even talking about them, Pete. What are you talking about right now? Like, where did that even come from? Or, like, one time after the show, he's like, "You know, I introduce Steve Harvey to..."
Oh, God.
And I'm totally fucking up his accent because it's been so long since I've talked to him. But he was just yelling about, like, how he, like, invented Steve Harvey.
Always
and I was
with
just
the
like,
Steve Harvey.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Pete. did you make it on to the next round after Wednesday night?
No.
Are they still doing that?
Yeah, that's what it was. I had a really good set. I was kind of surprised, but...
Yeah.
Same thing happened to me, but I mean, you know, some people... are women, and some people aren't clean enough sounding. Basically, I found out the first time, I feel like the first time I made it to the second round, but then other than that, it was just like, I didn't bring anybody.
I didn't bring anybody either, which was an issue.
The people who were way worse, they brought like 7 people they went on, and I'm like, oh, surprise, surprise.
You can stack the deck that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Both. I think I ran, the excuse I was giving myself is I think I went over by a little bit. I know they're strict about 5, and I think I did like 5 minutes and 15 seconds or something.
So I will tell you, they're strict about 5, but very selectively, because there's definitely been times where I was up there, I've had people recording, and I was at 3.5. And, like, I got the light, and then 15 seconds later, he shut the lights and the mic off. And then other times, I've been up there for 7 minutes, and I still don't get a light. So I'm just like, okay, gonna wrap now, see ya.
So
like,
I'm sleeping back there.
Yeah.
I did, like, the semifinals or something like that. And it was, like, I couldn't tell where the light was coming from. Like, I didn't know if it happened or not. I'm like, at this point, it's usually happened.
It probably did.
I think I'm about to get disqualified because I don't know where... the fuck I am right now, and I'm like, all right, and that was it.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it was, I remember talking to you about it, and you were like, I said fuck, and I shouldn't have, and then you were like, and I didn't also know that this was a competition, I just thought I was going up to do stand-up.
I didn't know it was a competition. I showed up, and people were like, is this your first time doing a competition? And I was like, what?
The fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the first time. I didn't know it was a competition. I think I said fuck like 3 or 4 times.
But that's the other thing, too, is, like, he'll just, like, yell at you about not saying the F word, and then sometimes he just doesn't care. Like, he just won't
pay attention. He didn't say anything to me.
Yeah, he won't say anything, he won't pay attention. And then sometimes...
The first thing he said to me...
What's that?
Was the F word. This is the first thing he said to me in person was that for him.
Oh, yeah. He'll say it. He'll say fuck, fuck, fuck all day long. You say it on stage. He, like, will actually get on the mic and he'll be like, get off the stage. Yeah. Like,
this is a clean show. You have clean material. You're not a good comedian unless you have clean material. You can't do anything. Like, you don't have stuff that's clean.
Enough of that.
God turned into, like, a weird foreign, angry foreign man who's just like,
hey.
Does not like cursing. Like, breathing, and then except like, if he's doing it to you.
God really hates Bill Squire and Cody Cooper and just gets on and is like, hey.
Aw, shout out to Cody Cooper. He's got a baby.
He just had a baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So aww. Cute.
It's so cute. They named him Cody Beckett because he's Cody mm-hmm. and his wife's Becky. And I was like, oh, my God.
Oh.
They're crazy.
That's a good one.
They're crazy in love. It's really, really gross.
Yeah.
Actually, the last time you were here, we did an episode with Cody. And as we were talking to him, like, Becky wanders on and she's like in this little like parka with fuzzy hood and she's like, I'm going out to play in the snow. And then she like leaves and then he's like, yeah, I made her go out and shovel. I was like, what?
My neighbor's gonna really hate me again.
She was like so cute and optimistic about it. And he's like, yeah, I just made her go out and shovel. And then at one point he looks out there's like, my neighbor's checking out Becky. I gotta go see what's going on out there. Gotta put a stop to this shit. I was like, well, this is what happens when you make your wife go out and shovel your fucking driveway. All right, so, Joe, where can we catch your next stand-up show and or sketch show? Because I am going to actually air this episode this week.
Oh, yeah. Good question.
Can people find you on social media?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. It's Joe is also here.
All one word.
I don't know why that handle wasn't taken, so it's mine now. And that's the same thing for Facebook. But I think I have the coolest show I have coming up, if anybody wants to go, is like March 9th, I think.
Okay.
And that's the like the Cleveland Comedy Opens. I got to the finals on that, so if anybody wants to go to that, that'd be fun.
Perfect.
And then the next Voltron show is March 6th.
Perfect. Check out
Flamingo. Which is sketch.
Check that out. They are really fucking funny. I saw them at Mayhall's over Christmas time, and there were a couple other sketch groups that night. None of them threw frozen pizzas and Aaron Carter CDs at the audience, but Flamingo City did, and it was amazing.
Yeah,
apparently people almost died. Yeah.
But what need the other sketches? They got to step up their game. I refuse to go to a show if I'm not getting a frozen pizza and or an Aaron Carter CD now. I've got standards.
You said like someone almost got a CD or a pizza to the eye or something.
Yeah, somebody came up afterwards and was like, this almost hit me in the eye, but it didn't. And I was like, so I don't understand the point you're trying to make right now. Like,
so, good catch. I don't.
Yeah, but I didn't hit you. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for the convenience. Like,
yeah.
I told him.
Sorry, I missed. I don't.
I witnessed James Cattullo exchanging. I think he caught an Aaron Carter CD, and some girl in the audience caught a pizza.
Yeah.
They're like, "Hey, do you want to trade?" And they're like, "Yeah." So they like switched the pizza.
We still talk about that. We're like, we'll be like nervous about doing a sketch, and I'll be like, "Well, we built an economy one time."
So,
like.
True.
Off of round things and square packages. It's like a pizza or a CD. Here we go. Just watch for the corners. Liz, do you have any social media you want to promote?
Elizabeth Seaman on Instagram, I guess.
Take that rousing endorsement. Yeah. And do what you will with it.
Hey, there's a picture of carrot pants. There's that's about my claim to fame on that.
You should just rename it to carrot thing. Pants.
Yeah, my new handle should just be carrot pants.
Carrot pants.
It's a baby carrot. That was like a
we're pant. Crushing the promotional game. We are crushing
I
it.
I know.
You guys are killing it right now.
There's a we're nice and awkward. Like, I guess if you want to look.
I mean, I guess if you want to.
Do you have any shows coming up? I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe.
March 30th at Coda.
Oh, March 30th at Coda. Go to
no,
that.
January 30th. Oh, just cool. Kidding. Just January
30th. Don't go March 30th. I mean, you can go March 30th, but Elizabeth probably won't be there. Yeah. And then, do you have any social media?
Maybe that's more reason to go. I don't know.
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at ggchick, ggchick.
And I'm at epicfaul, EPICFAUL, Instagram, Twitter. You can follow us also on Facebook at The Default Setting Pod. Thank you to OK Pants and Above Below Entertainment. And Thank you, Joe Briggs, for being amazing.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
I really appreciate you taking the time to redo this. And, hey, love you. Bye.
Bye.
Welcome to the default setting, where we find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. I'm your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm your co-host, Elizabeth Seaman.
Today, we have proprietress of the Side Quest bar, Ms. Harmony Moon. Mm-hmm. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? I'm chilling in bed. I'm snug.
And we also have special guest Gigi Chick with us here today.
She's
guest co-host. I fucked up the last episode with Harmony, so if I seem like I'm just like, oh, no, like rushing through shit, it's just because
remember that thing that we talked about that was so cool? Remember?
I don't want to waste anyone's time. I'm just like, no, we're just going to get right to the fucking point today. Which we're going to get right to the point of just talking about nonsense and talking over each other for a half an hour today.
Cool.
So, your default setting is trans bullshit.
Yes.
Yes.
Always, whether I like it or not, that's how people define me. So,
always,
you know.
Trans bullshit. And I want to know, because we were just talking about this, you recently wrote an article for Medium about sorority boys. And I feel like it gives you such a cool perspective on things that I think most people would just be like, the fuck? So I really want to know, like, from your perspective, because I didn't get a chance to read it yet, sort of, like, both sorority boys and cinema in general, like, how does that affect your perspective on these types of things?
I mean, as far as, like, any minority goes, you always want to have good representation, and in the way of most trans things, it's not good.
Are you trying to say the 80s and the 90s didn't nail it?
Oh, it's just, as much as I love Sleepaway Camp, it is not great.
Not spot on, you say.
It's complicated. Sleepaway Camp is complicated. It's good and it's bad. But as far as Sorority Boys goes, it's like, it's earnest. It's not that mean-spirited. It's not trying to have any kind of grand political statement. It's mostly like, haha, let's be funny. These guys are sensitive. But it's like, before movies like Superbad or I Love You Man or Role Models or all these other like bromance movies came out in like the early 2000s, it was kind of ahead of its time in that sense.
Yeah.
Because there were men who were in touch with their feelings and were just friends supporting each other, even if they kind of hated each other and had dildo sword fights.
I mean, isn't that just what guys do?
That's what guys do.
But
as someone who lived 18 years, I can say that I never lived that, but
I mean, this is like, I think my friend, they found like a massive dildo like in a parking lot, and it was like a suction cup. So he took it and he suction cupped it to his friend's car door. So to get to the car, he had to move it. Just like hanging off the side of a car. I'm like, oh man.
It's very disappointing. It's very disappointing that people listening to this don't have visuals, because I could literally reach behind me like 4 feet and grab like a tribal Amazonia spear with a golden dildo on it. Oh yeah, I made that for a costume that just never came together, and now it just lives here. Because like, what are you gonna do with it?
I got costume props.
The next time
like,
I want to come over to your guys' house because I want to just like see stuff like that and just be like, yes, this makes sense. This is just
yeah. You would be dumbfounded. It'd be great. Our whole kitchen is actually decorated for a lot of quote unquote problematic trans things. Like, one of the movie posters we have in there is this movie called Let Me Die a Woman, which is a quote unquote medical film, which basically means it was trying to get in movie theaters for having sex scenes like porn, but not be porn. So it recycles like old sex scenes from movies that were filmed like 10 years prior. It's got a way too young John Holmes in one scene.
Oh.
And it's like setting up a narrative of like, oh, this trans woman got her bottom surgery done and now her outie's turned into an innie. And the doctor's like, now you can't have sex for like 6 months. And then on her way to the airport, she got like rambunctious and had sex with the cab driver. And then it cuts to this scene, this, you know, just porn. And I think the implication in the original porn is his dick was so big that it like split her open and she was bleeding. But it's framed now with this context of this real trans woman's real experience, where this woman's now holding like her hand up and there's blood on it, and she's like, ah!
Oh my God.
But like, overall, it's got, like, some nice language. Like, it has things where it sits down with groups of, like, early transitioning people in, like, the 70s, and they're just having, like, a group chat about how their family doesn't get them and how they just want to, like, live their lives. And it's very earnest and sincere, albeit garbage.
Okay.
It's a good image of what that period looked like.
That's interesting. So is it, like, kind of part documentary or part just, like, I mean...
It's part documentary because they're interviewing this one guy who is the most uncharismatic person I've ever seen on film. Mm-hmm. He is this, like...
No way this isn't real, because...
Oh, no, it's super real. It's this schluppy doctor who I think I wrote down what he wanted to say, and he's, like, looking off the camera, reading something, and he's like, and these patients wish to... He wishes to become a woman... And we take the proper measures for her to go ahead and whatever. And he's doing it very medically and is, like, super he's very uninteresting and doesn't command the camera at all. But, like, he's giving a very good textbook definition of what transgender was in, like, the 70s. I'm like, oh, it's really brilliant. And then he talks to some people, interviews some people. There's some, like, sex workers that you get to talk to. And then there's just, like, half of it's porn. And then it's also filmed, like, very incompetently, where you're just filming it, and randomly it'll just cut, the camera will cut to, a, like, a soulless crevice of this room that just shot just made it in somehow, randomly. It'll just cut to weird random things that don't make sense. I love it. It's garbage.
I have a legitimate question. Like, how do you find these things? Like, how do you run into, like, films like this?
Well, my lovely future wife, one BJ Colangelo, is also knows way more about movies than I do. But occasionally I find things because I'm looking. I guess most of the time you're not looking for things. As far as, like, mainstream films go with trans themes, you're going to end up with, like, your drag queen films like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and, like, Tu Wong Fu. But then, you know, you'll get your Academy Award, Oscar bait, things like Dallas Buyers Club, Danish Girl, which I hope to be hate watching this weekend because I'm not going to enjoy it. It's Academy Awards season. I have to watch this awful film that was nominated for Best Actor for that schluppy kid who sings with the back of his nose from Les Mis. But
Kermit.
Yes. He's awful, right?
To sit through. I was like, things
like
that. I should be in this movie instead.
He's trying very hard. But one of them I found because when I'm bored, I tend to just look up slurs on Etsy to see what kind of merch I can find.
So I'll be,
oh, absolutely. I have a great shirt that's got vinyl script that just says faggot on it in pink. And I was just like, let's just see what happened if I look up faggot on Etsy and see what kind of cool stuff I can find. Anyway, I found this movie called I Want What I Want while looking up tranny, because I use tranny. That's my N-word. If you're going to throw that at me, I'm going to scoop it out of the air and put it in my pocket and keep it forever. But I'm like, let's just see what happens if I look up tranny on Etsy. I get a lot of, like, at least some of the more recent ones are probably the 90s, but, like, bad porn pamphlets where it's just, like, men forced to dress like women by tranny. I'm like, okay, cool. That sounds fun. And then I assume they have sex. I wouldn't know. I'm not spending $30 on a pamphlet. But I found this movie called I Want What I Want, and it's based on a book that was released, I believe, in the late 60s. And the movie is a British film that came out in 71. And it is honestly one of the most earnest and good representations of trans people I've ever seen in a movie, period. And it's over 40 years old.
Wow.
I think I saw you posted about it.
Probably. I think it's fantastic because it's like lost media, so it just exists on YouTube. So you can just watch it for free on YouTube. But I was like, what is this poster? I have to find this movie. Look it up. It's right there. And it's just this cis female actress who's just like, oh, I'm playing a trans person. So for the first 20 minutes of the movie, I'm pretending to be a dude and not doing a particularly good job of it because I'm clearly not born a dude.
Yeah.
I look like I'm 11, maybe at best. But then the rest of it is just her transitioning and her life and moving away and starting a new life. And it's like really wholesome and earnest and nice.
Oh, wow.
And I really like that movie. And I think considering, especially because the bar is really goddamn low, that I am praising films like Sorority Boys for its merit. Like, it's really well done.
I love the way your brain works, just because I would never think to kind of look into that stuff. Like, I would never think to go on Etsy and look up slurs and then go down this rabbit hole of, like, finding. And that's what's so cool, is when you're sort of thinking outside the box like that, the stuff that, like, you find and you run into and you become, like, interested in. Like, and something else we were talking about last weekend is, you were talking about how you wrote about Sorority Boys, and it's one of those films where I feel like most people would be like, really? Like,
oh yeah. You know what I mean? Oh, it's not doing anyone's favors with its like trailer or its poster. It looks like crap.
Right. But then like both you and BJ have like, and even my own personal experiences of sitting down and watching things that I think look terrible end up like convincing me like, oh, they're just selling this really badly, or they're marketing it to a demographic of people that I'm not in. But then when you sit down and you watch it, you're like, holy shit, this is actually a decent film. And I feel like you guys are really good about finding those kind of movies.
I mean, I like to think so. Like, I'm always looking for that new high. I'm always looking for that new awful film, or that new, like, good, bad film, where it gets into a complicated tornado of, is this good? I don't know. Is Sorority Boys good? No, it's not. It's absolutely not. I laugh at it because I have a bad sense of humor, and there's some really fun, there's a couple funny jokes in there, and I have nostalgia for it. But it's like House Bunny, but with dudes in drag, but maybe a little worse.
Yeah. Well, I wonder too, like, because the thing is, I've always struggled with the appreciation for B movies or bad movies. Like, I get very black and white about things. I'm just like, oh no, this is terrible, or no, this is very, you know, good. And so I wonder, like, in your mind, do you have a hard time differentiating between, like, do I love this because it's good, or do I love this because it's bad, and like just sorting all of that out?
I am a person with absolute garbage taste, so I just assume that everything I love is terrible. So that's my answer to that. It's like, is it good? Probably not, but I like crap. So I saw Cats opening weekend in the theater sober, so.
And how did you feel about it?
I heard that it wasn't as bad as some people thought.
And you probably liked it.
I had a great time! PJ and I had a very fun time.
Aww. Like, they almost made it like more entertaining than the musical and stuff. Like, whatever they did, they made it better than the musical, like the stage version. But at the same time, it's like, making that a little better doesn't like make it good.
Well, according to BJ, because BJ has a degree in theater, she apparently it's more cohesive and makes more sense as a story in the movie version.
That's what my friend was saying. Yeah, it's not so random.
Yeah, but that said, like, the choreography is really nice. Ian McKellen, as, you know, freaking Gandalf, is a cat, and he's doing very good. Jennifer Hudson is crying her heart out, doing such a good job. And they're in this trashy film that they did not know was going to be this bad, because they filmed all this not realizing how bad the CG was. Holy, everything that's wrong with the movie. Everything else that sucks about Cats is just Cats. That's normal. But, like, the CG is what makes it terrible.
I was going to say, the one thing that I heard, like, the biggest thing was that when the trailer came out, everyone was just like, what the fuck? Like, just the CGI of, like, they literally just look like they slapped Taylor Swift's face on, like, Garfield.
Yes.
And she's, like, dancing around. And so, like,
sounds like a nightmare.
And so, like, as I understood it, like, the biggest grievance is that, like, if it didn't already have a bad taste in everyone's mouths from the CGI, people probably wouldn't have, like, railed on it as hard as they did. But I love that perspective, that sort of fourth wall perspective of, like, here are these, like, amazing Academy Award winning actors doing, like, terrible, like, and they didn't know.
Yeah.
Like, they were
thinking. No, they had no idea. They didn't know it was going to look this bad at the time. But no, if you think it's terrifying, everyone's like, oh, it's a nightmare. I'm like, no, it's a nightmare at song 3, and then it kind of goes and becomes normal.
Okay.
But song 3 is the Rebel Wilson song that she sings.
Oh.
Everyone's like, oh, the cats are terrifying. No. No, the mice are terrifying because they have children faces.
What?
Yes. There's also dancing cockroaches that have human faces.
Nice.
Rebel Wilson also does a lot of things that involves, like, spread eagle, like the camera's looking right over where her cat vagina would be. There's also, like, a lot of bizarre foot fetishism in that. She also unzips her cat suit to reveal
that
there is... Yeah, it's really weird. She unzips her cat fur to reveal, like, a dancer's costume over other cat fur. So she that implies she's wearing a fake cat suit over her real cat suit.
We're going to have to put a spoiler alert on this episode for everyone who hasn't seen Cats yet, but I guess, like, that's just...
I mean, it does come into play. It helps her later on in a very weird, bizarre way while trying to escape from a fucking pirate ship in the middle of the Thames River.
Oh, my my God.
Who saw that coming?
I shouldn't. That's for sure. Yeah. So are you doing, like, a lot of film review type, like the Medium article that you wrote on? Is that a thing that, like, you're getting more into?
Yeah, I just started that a couple weeks ago, so I'm, like, kind of trying to pick up steam on that. Because, like, the reason that I was doing this is because no one... There's not, like, a good comprehensive, like, catalog of trans representation in media. It's mostly like, hey, here's a little bit, here's a little bit. But I'm like,
yeah,
for people who want to watch something that's good or wants an opinion, you know, a lot of people will be asking me or other trans people frequently, like, well, what's your opinion on the newest episode of The Family Guy and how it's was controversial for trans people? What's your opinion on this new episode of South Park and how it handled trans issues? And most of the time, I think people give bad opinions because they're just mad. And I go, no, it's not actually as bad as you're making out to be. And here's why. And I'm going to write about it because I would like people to have a different perspective on this.
Yes.
Granted, I'm in the minority, but I like to think I'm more fair about judging something. So I'm basically just cataloging it as like a means of people going, hey, you want representation? Here's where you should look. Here's where you shouldn't look. Here's why this is good. Here's why this is bad. And pretty much lay it all out in a hopefully well-organized, well-written mess.
I love that. Do you find that people get... I think this is something we touched on a little bit before, but like, do you find the people who get upset or mad are like... more allies to the trans community, or is it also trans people, or is it both?
I think it's both. A thing that I actually had to kind of deal with recently was, so their thing came out where J.K. Rowling hates trans people, and everyone's like, boo, I'm canceling her, and that's fine. I have no investment in Harry Potter to begin with, so it's no skin off my dick either way. But we were just sitting at the bar one day, and Harry Potter just happened to be on, like, USA, which was one of, like, the Sign TVs or something like that, or Sci-Fi or whatever channel it was on. And someone goes, I think we should turn this off because, you know, she really hates trans people. And I'm like, I'm not bothered by it. And she's like, well, she hurts so many people. I'm like, you're not allowed to be a cis ally to trans people if I'm saying it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm the trans person behind the bar. You're not allowed to go ahead and say whether this is offensive to me or not.
Yeah.
Wow. Also, it's called Death of the Author. Assume that she is pointless and meaningless and doesn't matter and then move on with your life.
I mean, why did she just in general, she just kept saying stupider and stupider stuff. Like, yeah. I don't have Twitter and follow or anything. I just every once in a while hear something. I'm like, oh, you could have just had all that money and just shut up. Like, just.
I think she likes attention. She likes being God.
Evil. Yeah.
Yeah, she ran out of stories, and now she's just like, am I still relevant? I need to say something to make myself still relevant.
But, like, why? It's just, that's so...
Why?
I just can't fathom having that kind of social following, like, financial power status, and, like, that being what you use your words. Like, I don't know. I just can't wrap my mind around it at all. Like, of all the fucking things you could talk about and say and speak and, like, speak towards and, like, that's what you're gonna put out into the universe, like, that's just, I don't know.
Yep.
That's really...
Well, the thing that's real interesting about, like, particularly her defending this woman who was, like, she wasn't even, I don't even think she was fired. Like, she was, like, gonna get let off anyway, and then, like, there's something about it. But she was, like, this is a war on women, we have to protect it, whatever, because... science, blah blah blah. So she's J.K. Rowling is defending this woman. She hadn't tweeted in like 4 months. So like she came out of like tweeting retirement to specifically get and die on this hill. And I'm like, okay, well, this clearly is something you're passionate about, which means there's no excusing it anymore. Yeah. So you can kindly fuck off, and then I'm gonna go about my business as though this doesn't affect me because it doesn't.
Well, that's what I love. We were talking about this last weekend. The thing about you and BJ is you guys can be very online, but also be very like pragmatic about things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been the hardest thing for me to be online is that I go apeshit. Like, and I don't do it actively. I do it more passively. Like I watch other people and then it just infuriates. Like it actually physiologically makes me angry. Like how people can just lose their shit about shit. But like you said, like you've never been a Harry Potter fan either way. So you don't, you know, I mean, this doesn't affect you.
Yeah. And I feel like, I'm indifferent.
Yeah. And so many people who weren't even Harry Potter fans were like going out of their way. Like you were saying, coming out of Twitter retirement to literally just be like, J.K. Rowling should be canceled. And it's like, you didn't care. So who gives a flying fuck?
I don't know, because people don't want their faves to be problematic. And I'm sorry, all of your faves do coke and their problems. Yeah.
Don't
except, accept them for their good things and acknowledge their bad things and take the whatever you want out of it.
That's it. Like, when you start saying you're gonna, and you can't, I mean, people do, this is a really controversial, like, sort of idea of separating artists from, you know, separating the work from the person or whatever. But, like, you know, if you start canceling everyone whose ideas you feel are problematic, you, after a while, you're going to be basically left with very few people, because you're just basically narrowing it down to this very small window of, like, people whose ideas you exclusively agree with, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, you end up putting yourself into, like, an echo chamber and only surrounding yourself with people who agree with you, which makes the world seem significantly more hostile as a result. But the issue that I have is that for someone like J.K. Rowling, like, she is not in her story. She is not, as much as she wants to pretend she's Harry Potter, she's not Harry Potter. But, like, it depends on, like, the perspective. A lot of people, particularly because I have social media, they feel a lot, like, more personal attachment to who, like, celebrities and stuff are. And for some of them, it matters more than others. Like, say, a stand-up comedian, they're, like, they might be putting on a show, but that, ultimately, that's probably at least some degree of who they are. Or a YouTuber, they are selling their personality to you. That is the content they produce. Someone like a writer, it's like they're not the same thing as other perspectives. Because you, like, an actor isn't, you know, you're putting on a role so you can appreciate the role, but not like the person. Like, Mel Gibson's really good in The Beaver. I hate how good Mel Gibson is in The Beaver, because Mel Gibson's a piece of shit.
Yeah,
right. But it's like, why do I like The Patriot? And so I enjoyed The Patriot and Braveheart, and I'm just like, I don't want to.
or Mad Max, and, you know, I have soft spot for what women want. Even though Mel Gibson should clearly get with Marissa Tomei and not Helen Hunt, but whatever.
My mom loves that movie so much.
It's cute. So I like it. I like it. But for certain people, like a musician or an actor or a director or a writer or something like that, it's so much easier to, I feel like, fairly separate them from their art, because their brand, the art they're putting out, isn't them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. At least not in a lot of cases, not specifically directly them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because like, a lot of people are, like, mad at, like, say, PewDiePie, because he's the easy example, where he's, like, been anti-Semitic and he's the biggest YouTuber in the world and all these awful things that he does. And I'm like, yeah, but when your brand is literally you talking to people on a camera over, like, video games or whatever, you can't really separate that anymore.
Yeah.
Like, your opinion, you constantly give your opinion on all this other stuff, which is why people watch. And then you give your opinion on something like this. It's like, ooh, no.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, so it's harder to excuse someone like a PewDiePie or a JonTron for another YouTube thing, or a Louis C.K. for the bad things and bad opinions and bad shit they do, because it's like, no, your entire, the product you are selling is you.
Exactly.
So you can't support the product without supporting you.
Like, even, so here's the thing, like, it was so funny out here, like, so right after the whole Michael Jackson documentary came out here, and then all that stuff sort of went down. Adam and I one night were at a winery, and they were, like, playing all this, like, fun music, and we were sitting outside, and it was great. And Don't Stop Till You Get Enough comes on, and, like, 10 seconds later just gets shut off. And I was like, so are we? I was like, and then, like, literally I was like, how are we now, as a society, for the last 40 years of listening to Michael Jackson, not gonna do it anymore? Like, how is that?
You kind of can't.
I know. Yeah. And then, like, that was, like, right after it happened. And now we go places all the time, and there's still Michael Jackson music playing, and it's like,
The world moves quickly.
Right.
And not even, like, specifically with the Michael Jackson example, but, like, I think people focus way too much of their time and energy and words on the wrong thing. Like, they're just all focusing on, like, oh, cancel this, cancel that. And you're like, no, you're not actually focusing on the fucking root of the problem that's causing people like this to do shit like that. It's like, it's just so stupid to me. I'm like, we shouldn't even be thinking about this piece of trash. Like, think about, like, the systematic issue that led them to
think that it was okay to fucking do,
you know?
That. Yeah. Like,
it's
yeah.
so frustrating to me.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, the issue I have with cancel culture just as a whole, and I say this as somebody who, if I ever gain any kind of notoriety, will likely get canceled, because it happens to everyone. Yeah. It's a rite of passage. But the problem I have with cancel culture is that by canceling someone, like, outright like that and just immediately discrediting them, there's no chance for restorative justice, and that's not how a society can function.
Right.
Like, I believe strongly in restorative justice. Like, God, I cannot think of a good example right now, but like, your actions speak louder than words. If you apologize and you make active progress to change and better yourself, then right. you should be allowed to do that. If you're not, and you're just going to repeat the same horrible behavior, then like, no, you can fuck off. Like, R. Kelly, can we just agree, like, as a country that we could, like, just throw R. Kelly in a pit and forget about him?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
R. Kelly's not going to get better. Like, we can cancel R. Kelly.
Yeah.
He had his shit. But, like, yeah. Other people where it's like, I don't know, like Gilbert Gottfried, they canceled him for a little bit because he made an off-color joke about like a tsunami, I think it was, and yes. lost his job as the Affleck duck.
Yes!
And I'm like, Gilbert Gottfried is a comedian who's made a bunch of controversial jokes for a long time, but I guess like the whole premise of time, tragedy plus time equals comedy, and there wasn't enough time, and everyone got mad at him for it.
And I think it was only Japanese people that were mad, because I'm sure American people were like, I don't care if he's making tsunami jokes, but yeah, like, I think the thing was Affleck has a huge Japanese customer base, so that's what ended up happening, was that he pissed off, like, too many of their customers when he made the joke.
I have no idea, but, like, it's just, that's an example where it's like, oh, well, I mean, I guess that was just one joke too far, but it's like, don't cancel Gilbert Gottfried. He seems like a pretty nice dude in every other respect.
I will say, like, one of the things that was making my blood boil for a long time was the idea, like, just how cancel culture was carried out. But then another thing, and I feel like BJ and I talked about this a little bit, is that it's really not, and because, you know, we were just talking about the Michael Jackson thing, it's really not that, it's not necessarily a death sentence when you're quote-unquote canceled because of the fact that people are so fickle and because they get over things so quickly. You know, people are very quick to cancel, but, like, really what does that ultimately boil down to? Like, there are very few people that have actually been, like, canceled in, like, the permanent sort of irreversible sentence. You know what I mean?
Gary Glitter is canceled.
Yes, and I think everybody supports... I don't know, how do you feel? I feel like, yes, a pedophile probably should be canceled, right?
I mean, yeah, but they still play Rock and Roll Part 2, the Hey song at sporting events.
True. I remember, like, somebody...
He's still getting royalties.
Well, they played it in The Joker, and I remember people were freaking out because they were like, I don't want him to get royalties, and apparently, like, there's some court rule now where he doesn't get royalties.
Because, oh, well, good. Because, well, that was the song that played when he came down the stairs or whatever, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, cool. Because I haven't seen Joker. That's on my hate watch list along with The Danish Girl.
Yeah.
Because I'm like... I really have liked not having to have an opinion on the Joker because it's got so many, like, shitty fuckboys who are like, this is what happens when you ignore white men for too long. They can only take so much before they snap. And I'm like, okay, school shooters, great.
I honestly freaked out when I saw it in theaters because of the scene. I was like...
I will say, though, like, the people who, before they even saw it, were like, this is going to cause mass shootings again. I'm like, you guys are like our parents in the 90s with video games and rap music. Like, you haven't seen this, and you're sitting here saying, like, this film's what's going to cause violence that's, like, already been happening. And, like, honestly, like, if film causes someone to shoot people, then they were probably already going to shoot people. You know, just, like, that whole argument.
Well, I mean, the whole thing that everyone's saying about the Joker is that it's just Taxi Driver, but with superheroes.
Yeah.
And Taxi Driver actually did cause people to shoot people.
Yeah, really?
Yes. Yeah, like, the whole thing with Jodie Foster, I think it was.
Oh, that's how the Reagan assassin guy happened?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Taxi Driver, wasn't it? I think.
I'm sure you're right. I have no
clue. And also, there's been shootings at Batman movies before. Like, it was kind of a fair concern. Like, it may have gotten blown out of proportion, but, like, I see where they were coming from.
Yeah.
It didn't make me want to go see it in the theater. I didn't go see it in the theater. Like,
and I wasn't, like, one of those people that was like, oh my god, this is gonna cause total destruction. And I was like, oh god, there's too many people in here. This is kind of fucking scary.
Yeah.
Like, and it was just like this awkward silence. Everyone was just like...
Everyone's tense.
It was just make it a personal choice. Like, if you don't feel comfortable, just don't do it.
We had watched the other one where, I can never remember the name of this fucking movie. The one with De Niro where he's a delusional comedian. What was that? Which one was that? So there was Taxi Driver, and then there was another one where he was...
King of Comedy?
King of Comedy. So it's literally both of those. Like, and it's there's very much that's like, they literally just took the plots from both and just combined them. And I just thought it was also insane that, like, De Niro is, like, such a, like, prominent character in this film. Like, it's just so, like, cheeky and sort of, like, it references itself sort of thing. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, I actually liked it. I actually thought it was really... I mean, any film where I'm just like, when it makes me feel things and I'm compelled and I'm lost in it, I think that qualifies.
The whole time.
Yeah. I think Literally. It qualifies as a good film.
I'm sure it's good. Like, I'm sure, like, Joaquin Phoenix, I'm probably is putting in a great performance, all this stuff, but it's like, I don't like what people are removing from this film. It's the same thing as people who are like, oh, well, I'm a Rick Sanchez. I'm a BoJack Horseman. I'm a Walter White. And I was like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
You're a sad little boy who's mad on his computer at home, but you are picking these anti-heroes who aren't supposed to be role models, and you're finding, like, solace in them, and you're not supposed to. And it shows that, like, how damaged you are.
And that's such a hard thing, is like, that's kind of in a lot of ways the point of film and TV, right? Is like, it's supposed to be something that we all relate to. It's supposed to be something where, like, a piece of us can say, like, oh my god, I'm not alone, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then that's what's also so hard, is that people who have really, like, dangerous tendencies have that moment as well, and then that can really, like, stimulate the, like, oh, I'm not alone thing. The only hope is that, you know, maybe through the oh, I'm not alone element, through that can be sometimes enough to just say, like, oh, I don't need to kill people because there's other people out there that feel the same way. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I mean, people are always want to see themselves in film, and, you know, whatever they gravitate to, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, this is actually a thing that BJ and I have talked about with her and a lot of her horror friends, about how, like, specifically most queer representation you get in films are in horror films.
Okay.
Because they are already not trying to be a mainstream film. Generally, like, in the way that, like, something like, where they couldn't make Captain Marvel gay, even though she's clearly gay.
Yeah.
Like, she's obviously a lesbian. Or Elsa is coded to be a lesbian, but they can't make her a lesbian because it's the Disney brand, and they have to market to China, and that'll immediately shut it down. It won't be released there.
Right.
Horror films are not trying to do that. Plus, they always have a history of, like, using, like, vampires, an example, are, like, coded to be gay because the original vampires were lesbians.
Yep.
Before Dracula. Yeah. Dracula's a ripoff of lesbian vampires.
I remember reading this, so.
What? Yeah, so, oh yeah, did I just blow your mind?
I want to go to there.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, a lot of queer stuff is always, like, it's implied to be gay, so a lot of people gravitate towards it, which means that a lot of the representation that, like, you know, 2-3 generations of freaking LGBT people all saw was the only thing they were getting, essentially, was bad representation and horror movies where they're frequently the villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, or both, yeah.
Yeah.
But the ones I really like and I defend is Sleepaway Camp, which, if you've not seen Sleepaway Camp, it's a ripoff of Friday the 13th. Okay. It's a summer camp slasher film. It's fun, but not good. There's no ending to the movie.
Okay.
The ending is that Angela, the sweet little girl who's barely talked the whole movie, has a penis, and that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It literally just cuts to her holding a dude's severed head with her mouth open, like, ah! And then it's like, oh my god, she's a boy! Cut. End. Movie ends there. She doesn't get arrested. She doesn't get killed. She doesn't kill anyone else. The movie just ends there.
She's like, I'm
and then in the later Sleepaway Camp films, she ends up being, she ends up transitioning and is played by Pamela Springsteen, Bruce Springsteen's sister.
What?
That's a thing. But everyone says it's bad trans representation in the same way that something like Silence of the Lambs is like, oh, it's bad representation because he's clearly is a psychopath and he's a killer. And it's like, no, the counterpoint I make to something like Sleepaway Camp and why I gravitate towards that character and I love her is that that's representation I will see as, okay, it's unintentionally good because it's like, oh, hey, here's our big twist, shock, joke, whatever. She has a penis. Haha, that's the culmination of the film. Mm-hmm. But she was also, like, adopted by her crazy aunt, whom I'm obsessed with because she's fucking crazy as shit, and she was adopted as a child after a boating accident, and she's like, well, I already have a daughter. I already have a son. I don't need another son, so you're going to be Angela now, and raised her to be a girl, which is representation saying that, like, don't force someone to live in a gender that they don't want to be in, especially because, like, plenty of serial killers have, you know, track records of being forced to cross-dress by their parents in real life.
Yeah, there is, like, often a lot of cross-dressing involved.
Yeah.
I was
just thinking, I saw a movie, a like, a couple weekends ago. It's a British one, and I don't know, it's there's like a, there's the, it's got one of those things where it's like a trans, like a twist at the end, and it's like, yeah. What? Like the woman who's holding the whole cabin like hostage, like everyone's like, why is she even here? We're here to celebrate our friend who died. And then all of a sudden it's just like, oh, this woman this guy brought isn't, they're like, that was our old friend who had a crush on this dude and he didn't want to have anything to do with him then. So then he left the country, became a she, came back, was this woman, got into your little party, and then tried to kill, like, poison them all.
That is a long walk for a short drink of water.
Elaborate, yeah. So,
that was like, she got real deep for that revenge.
So she was Ace Ventura-ing them.
I guess so, because then, like, she gets all crazy, and it's like, oh.
That is no bueno. Well, BJ and I are
not even that old. It's not even that old.
BJ and I watched a movie recently. It was a gay New Year's Eve slasher movie.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was called, like, New Year's Kiss or something like that. I don't remember. But then, like, there's this long revenge plot of this guy going after, like, this group of, like, everyone in this movie is gay except for this one woman who's just friends with the gay guys. And it's this long plan he's got to get revenge on this guy who kissed him on New Year's Eve, like, 7 years ago.
That sounds like a guy thing.
Yeah,
maybe. He was like, well...
How dare you make me question myself?
Spoilers, I guess, for this movie that I can't even remember the full name of. He's like, I wasn't out yet. You kissed me. That was my first kiss, and it meant nothing to you. So I'm going to kill you on all your friends.
Oh, so he sounds like a teenage girl.
I can actually understand that argument a little bit. Like, you ruined my first kiss, and, you know.
Yeah. So then he got engaged to that guy's friend and infiltrated their friend group.
Oh, my God.
See, that's the one. It was, like, infiltrating the friend group to, like, take revenge.
Do you guys watch Frankie?
Hmm?
Do you watch Grace and Frankie, the show?
Oh, no, but everyone tells me I need to.
Well, whatever. Spoiler alert. Another spoiler
alert. Oh, no!
It's just the new season came out, but that was reminding me of, like, the one character, Bud. He has this, like, resentment towards his college girlfriend, and his brother starts dating her seriously. They just, like, hit it off. They ran into each other, and he's like, how could you do this? She broke my heart. Like, I lost my virginity to her. And, like, they end up talking about it, and he's, like, married now, and his wife is just like, what the fuck? Like, you're married to me. Get over this chick. Like, she's standing right here. What's your problem? And he was like, you broke up with me via text, and she's like, we weren't that serious. Like, we dated for, like, 6 weeks, and he's like, I lost my virginity to you. And she was like, you fucked the couch. Like, you didn't even get hard enough to have sex with me. Like, you were, like, it was the couch. Like, you didn't realize, and he was like, I lost my virginity to a couch.
To a couch.
And he, like, for years had been, like, holding in this, like, anger.
Oh, I'm trying to remember. I think it's, what is it, Terror Train, I think, which is stars Jamie Lee Curtis, like a young Jamie Lee Curtis, like a la first Halloween Jamie Lee Curtis. And, like, the killer in that one is this guy that I think they pulled a prank on him, and they had him have sex with a dog or something, and then he went and just went on a slashing killing spree.
God.
I only was, like, half watching it the one time we had it on, and I was like, excuse me? But yeah, I think it was something like that, and I'm just like, oh, dear.
Yeah, the gotcha sex revenge. I kind of did not know that was a genre of thing.
It's a subtrope, apparently, so. Sex is a powerful tool.
No shit. Well, this has been wonderful. Thank you again so much for coming back and talking to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again and rambling about random movies, I guess.
No, this was fun. I'm glad. Like, I just didn't want you to have to repeat everything you said last time, so I'm like, let's fucking talk about, like, your movies, and, like, that's...
Yeah. I don't even remember what I said last time, so it doesn't matter.
I don't really either, but I was like, I just want to take this down, like, a road that, like, we can actually talk about the stuff, because you're writing articles now. You have an article on Medium that just came out, correct?
Yes, that's the one on Sorority Boys, incidentally, the one I think is better, because it's a better movie, is about Assassination Nation, which is fantastic. If you want to watch, like, a modern violent take on, like, something like Mean Girls or Heathers or The Craft, then go watch that.
Hell yeah. I used to love all of those movies as a teen.
Oh, then you'll probably love this. This is fantastic. It makes you feel a little bit old, but, like, the soundtrack is a banger, and, like, the writing's really good, so.
Hell yeah. We were just talking last night about how, like, the soundtrack is always inversely proportionate to the movie, at least as far as, like, if the movie is terrible, the soundtrack is almost always amazing, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, this show's, this movie's done by the guy, I forget his name, but he also did Euphoria on HBO, which also is, like, essentially the same thing, but in show form, and also has a banging soundtrack, so.
Okay, right on. Euphoria is actually amazing, so that's a,
yeah.
Maybe TV soundtracks are not the same as film soundtracks.
Yeah,
as
I feel like TV's, like, that's, like, a different thing.
Yeah.
The soundtracks.
Yeah.
The movies, like, if it's...
They don't have as much of a budget for good songs.
Yeah, that's true.
Like Twilight, they help you Garden find State. Cool
stuff. Yeah.
Well, that does have a good soundtrack. I'm frustrated about how good Twilight soundtrack is.
I would never have meant to watch it.
Exactly, yeah. Garden State, Batman Forever, amazing soundtracks, not such great film.
I like the show that you're the worst, their soundtrack. Like,
they have an amazing soundtrack.
It's so good, but the show is also really good, so it's just a win.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, so it does
the soundtrack is why everyone thinks Dazed and Confused is good.
Yes, that's true.
I hate Dazed and Confused. Everyone's like, but the soundtrack's so good. It's such a good movie. I'm like, it's not. It's a bad movie. Stop it.
Find the playlist and shut up.
Yes.
Hey, Harmony, where can we find you on social media?
I am on Instagram and Twitter at Velocitraptor. There's a Veloci underscore trap underscore tour. So you can find me there. And mostly I just retweet people who are funnier than me while occasionally making a joke that I think is funny. I don't know if anyone else does.
Elizabeth, do you have any social media you want to promote?
There's Instagram. I post that sometimes.
Carrot Pants.
What else is ups and downs?
Carrot Pants.
Yeah.
Check it out. Gigi?
You can find me on Instagram at g.g.chick.
And you can find me at EpicFaul, E-P-I-C-F-A-U-L. You can find us at The Default Setting Pod on Facebook. Thank you, OK Pants. Thank you, Above Below Entertainment. And especially thank you to the wonderful Harmony Moon for coming back and talking with us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Polite. Okay, love you. Bye.
Bye.